Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North lead writer at Bleacher Report and Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I'm joined this week, like every week, by my co-host, Brian.
Happy holidays, Andrea.
Happy holidays, Brian. Did Santa bring you everything you wanted for Christmas this year?
Close enough.
He forgot my coal.
Your coal?
Yeah, he forgot my coal.
Well, you know, maybe we'll find some of that around for you.
Yeah, he might have dropped it. I mean, it's just like some dumb rock. See, if I can insult Santa a little bit more, maybe he'll show up late with my coal.
Yeah,
that
there
dumb
you go.
Rock, that dumb guy, that dumb red suit.
But yes, it was a fine holiday, and with the exception of my Lions.
Yeah, that'll happen.
They didn't give me what I wanted for Christmas.
Yeah, some teams gave their fans what they wanted for Christmas. Some teams have fallen short. And there's not a lot of time to fix it. It's week 17. It is the last week of the regular season for this year. That's it.
So, yeah, speaking of coal, I'm sure there's more coal coming for fans of certain teams.
Yes.
And bountiful presents for others.
Yeah, especially because there are some significant playoff spots still up for grabs. The NFC North and the NFC East will be decided on Sunday. The sixth playoff seed in the AFC will also be decided. And, of course, there's all kinds of stuff that can happen with seeding between now and then. I think two of the most significant developments so far this week in terms of the playoff implications. The Green Bay Packers will be getting Aaron Rodgers back at quarterback this week. The Green Bay Packers take on the Chicago Bears, and the winner wins the NFC North division. So it's obviously the exact right time for Rodgers to be coming back from his collarbone fracture.
Well, for the Packers, but not for the Bears.
Not for the Bears, but for the Packers. It's great news. It's something they've been hotly anticipating over the past couple of weeks. The Rodgers watch has been on almost nonstop on certain segments of the football community, and especially on Twitter. So, you know, nice belated Christmas present for Packers fans.
Oh, absolutely. I think I called that one last week.
Oh, yeah.
That he's going to somehow get back in time to save this team playoff chances, and they're going to end up winning the division, and, you know.
It's looking like Randall Cobb will potentially be back on the field on Sunday as well. And Eddie Lacy, he's not practicing this week, but he's going to be a go on that ankle for Sunday as well. So all of that just doesn't bode well for the Chicago Bears and their bad defense.
Yeah, and that, you know, the Packers certainly haven't had a stellar defense by any stretch, and they're a little banged up too. So should make for an interesting game, but yeah.
Huge game.
That's it's huge game, NFC North championship, basically, and like you said, it's good timing for the Packers at this point.
And this is definitely the game that probably should have ended up getting flexed out to Sunday night, but the NFL and the networks, they all made the decision before we got the news that it's not looking likely that Dallas Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo will be on the field against the Philadelphia Eagles. And again, the winner of that game, which is on Sunday night, will be the winner of the NFC East. Because it couldn't come down to any other thing but Week 17. I think this is at least the third year in a row, perhaps, that the division has come down to the final game of Week 17, the NFC East.
Yeah, the NFC East is really giving back to the NFL since they've decided to, you know, employ this format to ensure that there's divisional games for the last week of the season. Because has it not come down to the last week since they started doing that a couple years ago?
I think it's always come down to that for the past 3 years.
And it makes sense. You know, that's just how that division is. So.
Yeah, it's exciting, but, you know, it's we're likely to get, and barring something special happening or Tony Romo just deciding to go, I mean, he's got a back injury. He's got a herniated disc in his back. He got an epidural to try to manage the pain. It only helped slightly. He's not at practice. He hasn't been at meetings. He's obviously in a lot of pain. That would mean Kyle Orton would be the Cowboys starting quarterback this week, and he'd be backed up by the 41-year-old John Kitna, who was teaching high school until apparently he, who is a former Cowboys backup quarterback, reached out to the Cowboys and said, hey, you know, I do know that system. If you need an additional quarterback, I'll come in and I'll back up Kyle Orton.
Well, I know the supportants are definitely excited.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the big chance for But you see, the thing is, too, is that, you know, Tony Romo, with this injury, which will apparently require surgery at some point, you know, if he can't go this week, I mean, it's not like a thing like a herniated disc gets better.
Right.
It's something you have to address surgically. So, you know, if the Cowboys do beat the Eagles this week, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bittersweet. I mean, there's playoffs or else is the mandate apparently for Jason Garrett, the head coach in Dallas. But then when you're playoffs or elsing and then you get in with Kyle Orton, you know, it's the chances of, you know, not being one and done just seem, you know.
It's tough.
Especially with their defense. I mean, their defense
isn't helping.
If Romo's
not going to be able to go Sunday, even if they win, the thought that he's going to go in the playoffs is pretty slim, I'd say.
Exactly.
I mean, well, so is he looking to have surgery anytime soon, or?
Yeah, I think he's going to be having surgery soon. I think they just want to see what plays out on Sunday, and then kind of go day to day with Tony Romo from there, and see if he can get on the field.
I mean, I guess in case something happens to Orton, then, you know, do you want to, even then you're going in the playoffs with John Kitna as your quarterback?
Yeah,
41-year-old John Kitna, who was doing what?
He was teaching high school.
Teaching high school
in Oregon, I believe.
Interesting.
Washington or Oregon, one of those.
That'd be weird if, like, John Kitna was your high school teacher.
That would be weird. Mr. Kitna.
Mr. Kitna.
He was teaching, like, science or chemistry or math or something. It was something like that. The AFC playoff picture is still interesting. If, for example, the New England Patriots somehow lose this week against the Buffalo Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals beat the Baltimore Ravens, then the Bengals actually move up to the second seed and they'll have a first round bye.
Mm.
And then there's also the matter of that sixth seed. Last week, nobody clinched it and everything went the Pittsburgh Steelers' way. In order for the Steelers to stay alive to week 17, the following needed to happen. The Chargers needed to go at either 0-2 or 1-1, and they won last week. They needed the Dolphins to lose. They lost to the Bills. They needed the
Ravens to lose. They lost.
And they lost. And by default, they needed the Jets to win because they were playing Miami. And that, so all those things happened, and the Steelers won. So they beat the Green Bay Packers. So they are mathematically still alive, but they are actually the longest shot to get in right now at 7-8. Miami has the clearest path. Basically, all they need to do is beat the Jets, and they're in. They're the sixth seed. You know,
is that in Miami?
That is in Miami.
Okay.
There are other things involving Miami losses and San Diego losses and Steelers losses that mean Baltimore's in. Or Miami loses and San Diego loses and Baltimore loses and then Pittsburgh wins and then they're in. And so on and so forth. So there are a few... few scenarios still left.
And the Pittsburgh's playing the Browns, right?
And Pittsburgh is playing the Browns.
Okay.
So, you know, it's looking good for the Steelers to win this week, but for all of these other situations to play out seem pretty difficult. Again, you know, Miami hosting the offensively challenged Jets. And, you know, and the Chargers are in a good situation. They're hosting the Kansas City Chiefs, but it's looking like the Chiefs might be resting their starters because they already have the fifth seed locked down. There's nothing else they can do.
They can't do anything else. And
so there's no other. They have no chance of moving up in the seedings. So it's looking like, you know, we're not going to be having Jamal Charles and Alex Smith on the field. So, you know, I think the Chargers
have a fighting chance.
Have a fighting chance against a not full strength starter filled KC Chiefs team.
Yeah.
And then, after this, next Monday, that's when coaches are going to start losing their jobs.
Ah, yes. Black Monday.
Black Monday. There's already
been so-called Black Monday.
So-called Black Monday. There's already been rumblings that Penn State head coach Bill O'Brien has been approached to interview for the vacant Houston Texans head coaching job. You know, you and I have talked about this before, of just like how much, when you take that Penn State job, when you're Bill O'Brien taking that Penn State job, coming off of, you know, the Jerry Sandusky thing, the Joe Paterno thing, all of it. That mess.
Walking into that mess.
I don't see him walking away from it so soon.
That's the thing is it
I mean, the NFL's that's an enticing job.
When that whole thing went down with Sandusky and the Paterno past and all that, you knew that program was in a state of turmoil. And, you know, who was going to walk into that mess? And, you know, it's with...
And want to. Want to take that on?
Right, because it's such an incredible challenge, and it's not just about, you know, picking up the pieces on from an old coaching regime. I mean, it's all the stigmas, all the bad feelings for the program, and everything that happened, and not to mention all the actual football troubles. And he actually, he did a great job. I mean,
he's done a great job. So
and you know, they certainly didn't win anything crazy, but they played pretty well this year. They picked up the pieces and were able to move on. He's done a good job of you know,
ushering in a new era of Penn State football where you don't have to be obsessed with the past.
Yeah,
and like
getting him over that hump.
That
of,
hump because
of
it was
everything
that horrific
of the fallout.
Everything,
basically.
Yeah.
And so he's done an admirable job with that. And you know, I think people were talking about him as a coach before he in the NFL before he took that job.
Correct.
At Penn State.
Yeah, because he was the Patriots offensive coordinator. So
right, and so you know, but then he took the job. And that's the thing is it's hard to know without, you know, knowing him personally or being him, you know, himself, you know, it's hard to know exactly what all his motives were in that. But, you know, I can't imagine a guy just, you know, taking that job with the intention of moving to the NFL. Now,
yeah, knowing that he's going to maybe he'll stick around for two or three seasons and then move on to the NFL. But the NFL, I mean, that's enticing.
At the same time, you know, even if he didn't have the intention, you know, yeah, maybe
there are offers you
now
can't refuse.
With overtures that are going to come in, which have already started with the Texans, like you said. You know, it's hard to say if he's going to be able to turn it down, if that's what his ultimate goal is. But that's what I'm saying. It's hard to know what his ultimate goal is without knowing him. So,
well, and then the other thing to consider too is that I don't think that as long as Bill O'Brien is with Penn State, that his name is never going to stop coming up. It's going to keep coming up every year. If he doesn't want this Texans gig or whatever else he's approached for this year, he's not going to all of a sudden not be another commodity next year for the NFL. You know, he's going to be a perpetual name for a while.
I think there's some credence in the statement of, well, if you pass it up now, are they still going to be interested in the future? And I think that certainly, as long as he keeps turning the program around and getting them back to, you know, the solid football program that they have been for so many years, you know, I think that's really ultimately what is going to determine future interest in him.
Right.
Should he stay? But again, it's really tough to say what his ultimate motives or goals are with that job at Penn State. Or with his career in general, is he going to want to take that step and get back to the league, or is he going to want to is he really trying to, you know, finish the job finish job he started by going to Penn State,
right,
and taking this challenge
on? Why do
you
take on this job? It's such a huge amount of work needed to be done with Penn State that it's not the job you take for two or three
right.
seasons.
And that's the thing is, and I've always been one to say that it's tough to say what any college coach's career goals are or what would
right,
potentially
lure them.
Right, because
some prefer to stay in college.
Personally,
you know?
Personally, I mean, if I were in somebody like Nick Saban's shoes or something like that, just as an example, there's a lot of coaches you could put in there. But if I was in that situation where I have a solid thing built, I mean, just the job security alone. I mean, you're so set in college, you know. I mean, it's different for Saban, obviously. If he fell off for a couple years, the SEC has pressure like nowhere else in college. You know, maybe there could be some issues there, but it's Nick Saban. Nick Saban's not going anywhere. He can coach there until he's ready to retire.
Yeah,
and
if he so chose, he could. He would move on his own because he had a thing he wanted to do.
That's the thing. If something happened and they had a couple, you know, 8 and 5 years or something, is he going to be in danger of losing his job? You know, there's going to be, you know, more pressure on him than even now where he's expected to do all this every year. It's going to be, you know, certainly going to be higher than that. But like I said, that's tough to say that he'd ever get there anyway. But regardless, you know, you're at the top. When you're at the top of the coaching world in college, you can be these guys that, you know, fade off into the sunset, you know, like a Bobby Bowden, or I mean, speaking of Penn State, like Joe Paterno was. I mean, he obviously, the end of his career was not what anybody expected by any stretch, but he was there forever. You know what I mean? And that's all I'm saying with him is just that he was there for so long, and he could have easily retired 10 years before any of this stuff ever came out, and he would have been this legendary coach forever, you know? And, that kind of stability and job security is available at the college level, and it's just not there in the pros.
No, it's definitely not.
There's a couple coaches that have longer tenures, but, I mean...
Every year. Your job can cause you to have a stroke, and then the team still fires you before the season's over, you know?
Like, case in point.
There's no job security in the NFL. I think there's only one sense of job security in the coaching world in the NFL, and that's for the Steelers, only because they don't do coaching turnover. You know, Mike Tomlin's their third head coach since 1969. You know what I mean? But, you know, he throws together a few too many losing seasons, and he's not safe. And just because the Steelers don't turn over coaches all the time doesn't mean that he's guaranteed to be there 10 or 15 or 20 years or whatever he would want, you know. But, you know, that I would say is the only head coaching job where you can feel a little bit comfortable if you have a bad year.
Right.
Belichick, of course, but he doesn't have a bad year, so that's moot.
Right, and I mean, Belichick is the example in the pros that I guess is akin to Nick Saban in that he's done so much, he's been at the top for so long, it's kind of hard to see him ever getting the situation where the team wants to move on, and that organization, that team, it gets slumping and things like that, and to the point where he's got all this pressure and he's on proverbial hot seat.
He'd retire before
there was enough.
Yep.
Enough there for anybody to push him out, and but that's an exception.
Yes, like that's a major exception.
The rule in the NFL is that you got to do something within a couple years. And regardless of what you've done.
Mm-hmm. It's what have you done for me lately with coaches just like players.
Yeah, absolutely. So to leave the point here is that to leave the comfort of the college to move to the pros with all that pressure, I mean, I don't know. If I were a college coach that had a solid thing going,
You'd keep that thing going.
I'd probably just keep that going, yeah.
Yeah. So do you think, you're a Detroit Lions fan, so this is a pertinent question. So do you think it's it for Jim Schwartz? You think they're going to can him and get a new head coach?
I'm finding it hard to think that it's not going to be the case because, even I'm kind of on board with the idea at this point, and I'm an eternal optimist, and...
You get the sense that he's carried them as far as he's capable of helping carry them.
I mean, you get the sense that what's holding them back right now is him.
Yeah, and his coaching philosophy.
It's not even his game plan or anything like that. It's the philosophy. Where their biggest issues are is mistakes and penalties,
discipline.
Finishing. You kind of feel like...
Finishing games.
Yeah, finishing games. You feel like they've built this team to have this talent, to have these guys on this team, to be, to have expectations, and you don't see it going anywhere, you know? They got to the playoffs a couple years ago for the first time in forever, and they, promptly lost, and it was a game where they were competitive for, easily the first half, and then they got in the second half, and it was same old Lions, and they kind of shot themselves in the foot, and they were in New Orleans, and the Saints did their thing that game, after that, it was kind of like, okay, well, we made this step, you know.
Okay, now let's make the next step, let's win the playoff game. Then they step back instead.
The next year, barring any crazy setbacks or anything or unforeseen
major injuries.
Circumstances, exactly, you kind of expected them to be right there in the playoff hunt, if not going to the playoffs, if not winning a playoff game finally since the first time since 91, and the only time since 57, and And then what happens is they had the 4-win year last year. So that was the first, like, really really ominous sign, I'd say, for him. And then this year they come out and, there was they only in the first half of the season they only lionsed, and I'm using that as a verb. Yes, they only lionsed a couple times in the first half of the season. They were winning games that, you know, like in Washington. Now, Washington obviously has been a mess this year, but it was the first time they had won there in 70 or 80 years or whatever it was, and like they were, and it was a Lions win on the road, and it was, you know, they were doing these things, and you're thinking like, well, maybe this is the year they actually turn the corner here.
No, I was very excited when Cincinnati went into Detroit and like beat them. What was it, 37, whatever it was,
whatever the score was.
That was one of the things that helped me be like, yeah, I'm right about the Bengals. Look at them go into Detroit and win. You know?
It seemed impressive at the time.
It absolutely was.
And you know, at the time, it was exactly.
They were on a good streak there for a while.
They were playing well.
And then the second half of the season, they started by
going to Chicago and winning a game there, which they swept the Bears. Rodgers is hurt at that point. They had what looked to be a pretty easy schedule.
They could walk right into the playoffs and honestly, win the division. I mean,
honestly,
they could
looking
have.
Back, it should have been a winnable schedule for them. Tampa, yeah, played a little bit better in the second half of the season,
but not significantly.
But they, not to the
so,
point where the Lions should have lost to them in Detroit. They annihilated the Packers without Rodgers, which, you know, I think that was the last breath of hope that there was, and it's just, but other than that, it's just been a collapse since they won that game in Chicago. And you know, obviously there's only been one win, and not only are they losing these games, they're losing them in spectacular fashion, in ways that only the Lions can. You know, for the Lions fans, it's all
I don't even know
why I thought for a second that it was gonna be any different this time, and blah 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 blah. You know,
there's a lot of reason to believe that it would be different though, and
there was at the time, and but here we are. They've continued to do what's plagued them since Jim Schwartz has taken over, and you know it's tough. You know, you're conflicted as a fan because, you know, they were in the doldrums for a decade.
Yeah.
And he helped get them relevant again. He helped them crawl out of the depths of what they were under Millen. And but you could continually see cracks in the foundation. And you know, they have this young infusion of talent, and what are they doing with it? You know, it's you know, Sue is still, I'd say, you're hard-pressed to find people that don't say Sue has all the physical gifts to be one of the best defensive tackles in the league.
Oh, yeah.
Yet people aren't talking about him like they were after his first or even second year.
Right.
And it's because of his discipline issues. And obviously he's under the crosshairs from the NFL. But at the same time, you don't quite see any strides being made. You don't see, you know, further development of a lot of these guys.
Right.
Stafford's a great example.
Right.
And that's actually, honestly, I think, as much as everything, the discipline and all the other issues that Schwartz has had, the fact that
Stafford's kind of plateaued with him.
Stafford's kind of, yeah, he's kind of stuck in this situation where, yeah, he's, you know, he's an immensely talented quarterback.
With a lot of different styles of throwing.
He can do a lot of stuff. Yeah, he's gotten obviously a lot of pub for his different arm angles and all that stuff. And I'm one to say that, you know, I think that, you know, that can certainly help him in a lot of situations, but you know, maybe the issue of discipline for the whole team is also, you know, the root of the issue with Stafford is that he's not disciplined enough in his game, in his preparation,
right,
or any of that stuff. And it's, you know, the head coach sets the tone. You know,
exactly.
It trickles down from there.
And you know, I think the Lions, I think they serve as a good juxtaposition with the Bengals. You know, and a lot of people, you know, thought, oh, well, Marvin Lewis, obviously, you know, he's not he doesn't have a disciplined team. I mean, look at all these criminals the Bengals have had, so on and so forth. But he's been able to turn these guys around. You know, he doesn't come across as maybe this, you know, fiery guy or whatever, but he's able to get things out of his players and develop these young guys and build something. And then with Jim Schwartz, it's like he built something and it could only get to a certain level. And then, you know, he becomes part of the problem, you know?
Yeah.
The Lions could be the Bengals, but instead they're just the Lions.
Instead they're still the Lions. And
yeah.
And that's, you know, it basically, when it was Millen's regime, or by the end of Millen's regime, it was just a team devoid of talent, and they still had their Lions tendencies. And now they've fixed the talent issue. I'm not saying that they can't upgrade in certain positions.
Well, they have so much money wrapped up in the salary cap with just three dudes, so that also limits them a little bit.
That certainly hurts, but they've definitely made immense strides in improving the quality of players on the team.
Absolutely.
And especially with the fact that when they picked up Reggie Bush and they drafted Larry Warford, you know, at the time you didn't know what it was going to mean, but when you got into the season, you could see that Waddle, I think, the other, regardless, their O-line played better this year than I can remember.
Yeah, in absolutely.
Years of that team. And, the offense as a whole had just, you know, tons of talent on. You're getting to the point where, Nate Burleson was out for a while, and it was tough to find those backup receivers behind Calvin. But other than that, you know, there wasn't a lot of excuses on the offensive side of the ball. The defense still had some holes, and still does, obviously. You'd be hard pressed to find someone that wouldn't say that they didn't underachieve this year.
And, you know, I think it's an attractive coaching vacancy, too, if Schwartz gets fired. I mean, there's a lot of talent on the team. You've got Calvin Johnson. You know, uh-huh. You've got a good core of running backs. You've got a lot of good young guys. You got a defense that just needs to put it together.
Uh-huh.
So I think that that's a very attractive coaching vacancy, and I think it should be interesting. I like Mike Zimmer, the Bengals D coordinator. I think that the Lions should at least give him a ring-a-ding on the phone.
I'd really like that. I think that
he's
would be
got
a great
the discipline
move.
Too. I think it's, and I don't think it's an overcorrection from Schwartz either.
I think he's a good coach. I think he's been
he's a great motivator.
He's been a name for the last couple years. I think he's definitely going to be one of the biggest names this offseason for getting a head coaching job. I'm kind of thinking that he's not going to be there next year. He's going to get a head job somewhere.
That's why the Bengals need to get a Super Bowl this year, because they might be out two coordinators by the time this coaching stuff is over.
Yeah, potentially. It's hard to say, but that's what scares me the most about the Lions moving away from Schwartz is just, and that's just my Lions fear.
The starting over
is it's not necessarily starting over. It's just like, are they going to make the right decision? That is such an important decision. You know,
right.
Who's going to run your team? So,
other coaches on the hot seat. So obviously Mike Shanahan in Washington, and then his son Kyle Shanahan.
I don't think Mike Shanahan's even a hot seat at this point. I mean, I think that
he's de facto fired.
The seat's cooling down because he's already gone.
Yeah, and his son, the Washington offensive coordinator, Kyle Shanahan, said that he's going to split off from his dad now. He's going to find his own path. He's not going to work for his dad.
It's probably
so
a good idea.
That's
for
probably
him.
A good idea. Distance yourself from somebody who's quickly, I think, becoming a hiring pariah, mm-hmm. after what we've seen out of Washington this year. You know, Rex Ryan, he told his players last week that he fully expects to be fired. You know, it's close. I mean,
Rex Ryan would be another one. I wouldn't be too disappointed if I saw him in Detroit. I think.
Oh, I would. I don't think that works well at all.
I don't know though. There's something about Rex Ryan that he's a little too loose. He's a little bit too much of a player's coach, but he still can produce, and especially when he's got good talent around him. And I think that they have that, obviously. And you know, he's one of those guys that when you get the players there and they get the thing going, he can really put them over the edge.
That's why I like Rex Ryan to land as defensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears, because that could be just this brutal, chaotic football team with a Rex Ryan D.
That would be something.
But that would also require the Bears to go to a 3-4, and the Bears have never been 3-4. They've only been 4-3, and in this city would flip out.
That could be a stretch.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh, I suggested it once. In an article.
I think on paper that sounds really good, but I honestly think the spot...
I suggested that once in an article, and man, to Bears fans, they were just like, we cannot change. Like, we must always be 4-3, which I think is a little dumb, but I get it.
I don't think we're far off, though, by talking about teams in the NFC North for eventual landing spots for Rex Ryan if he's a DC.
Sure.
Because the Packers...
They need his help.
Especially because they already run a 3-4.
Yeah.
And they do have some talented guys on there, and obviously it's Rex in a DC
and
role.
And he would have, and he'd have a lot of fun with his good offense, taking care of some business for him, too.
Let me just say
so.
That I hope that doesn't happen, because they would probably be nasty within a year
oh,
or
yeah.
two.
Yeah, they would, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right?
That'd be tough for the other teams in the NFC North, I think. With Rodgers on the one side. And
Greg Schiano, of course, is definitely on the hot seat. We'll see what comes of this. I mean, now they have, what, 3 wins, 4 wins? I mean, that's not a lot of wins, but it's better than the 0 wins they had after, what, 8 weeks
yeah,
or
I mean,
10 weeks or whatever?
I suppose they could make a move there. I just...
I don't see him staying, though. He just seems too problematic overall.
Potentially, but I don't know. It's kind of like the issues... He definitely rubs people the wrong way. I mean, he definitely has been controversial, you know, his relations with other coaches, what other people think of him, and all that. But within this year, the biggest negative stuff around Schiano was all basically it had to do with Josh Freeman. And once Josh Freeman was gone, you kind of felt like the noise settled down and they started playing better football. Now, they certainly... They finally won some games.
They won some games.
And they ended up getting, what you say, like
four... Yeah, but we didn't hear anything about the circus out of there anymore.
That's the thing, is things were settled down, and maybe that's what he needed to turn the corner there and actually take a hold of things. And, you know, not being on the inside and knowing exactly what people, you know, the organization at the top thinks of him and what he's done, I'd say that I think there's still a good chance that he stays because of... them finally getting things together, and it was all basically after they moved on from that, mm-hmm. And Glennon certainly has shown promise. You know, they have a lot of things to do there still. There's
a lot of
business
stuff that
needs
to be done. They need to dump that Dashaun Goldston contract. He's a very unproductive safety.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's not working well, but...
Well, it's just a huge contract for a guy who's not
a
top 10 safety right now.
So, I mean, there's definitely some things they need to keep doing there, but I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe the organization... And again, this is without knowing anything about what they actually think there, but I kind of feel like maybe they think that, you know, they've made a step.
That the continuity...
And it's not quite time to bail on him yet.
The continuity is more valuable than getting rid of him right now.
As of right now.
Which, and I love... Continuity in coaching is very important.
Absolutely.
You know, even if a guy comes off kind of like a little jerk, you know?
I mean, Schiano came in, and Josh Freeman was the guy there.
Yeah.
And he was involved with drafting Glennon. He basically forced out Freeman in a way that I think left a lot of people
with a bad taste,
not feeling too good. Yeah, exactly. And so now they're in this situation where they got Glennon, and he looks good, but he's a rookie. I think it's to just, you know, flip the switch and go in another direction at that point. I don't know. Let's put it this way. I certainly wouldn't be surprised if he was there.
Dennis Allen, the Oakland Raiders head coach, you know, it's becoming a coaching carousel in Oakland lately.
Yeah.
And it's because these teams, you know, these new coaches who, you know, they keep inheriting the faults of previous regimes and poor use of draft picks, poor use of money. And you go into that job in Oakland right now handcuffed, essentially.
Set up to fail. I mean,
you're set up to fail. And it's so,
he was set up to fail when he took the job.
I think they set him up to fail. Like, they knew it was going to happen. They hired this guy, not... They had to have hired him knowing that this wasn't going to last, because it's just it's an unworkable situation in many ways right now in Oakland. There's not a lot you can do. I mean, when you're bouncing between Terrell Pryor and Matt McGloin, you know, when you've got money wrapped up into a running back who can't stay healthy, you know, you've got receiver health issues, you've got O-line issues, you've got defense issues. It's just so much.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, it's a what have you done for me lately sort of league.
But there's no opportunity to do anything in Oakland.
But the point is that you know, there's still a need to give guys time. I mean,
they can beat the Steelers, though. That's what Oakland can do.
You've seen plenty of situations where there's quick turnarounds and things happen. Chiefs, great example. First to, or worst to first, or you know, wherever they are now. But you saw that they were did they pick number one or number two last year? I mean, they were one of the worst teams.
Number one.
They were the worst team in the league last year, and here they are, you know, in the playoffs, and they were one of the best teams in the league for throughout the season. And you see those quick turnarounds, but you have to dig a little bit deeper to see what caused them to be so bad last year, and
right.
you know, what about, you know, making the move to Andy Reid and every the other changes they made,
Alex Smith.
It just kind of all meshed and it all worked. But that's not to say that, like, just because you're not doing well, you should make a move. You know,
right?
There's a lot that factors into that.
And that's been a constant.
Teams need to show patience. You
yes,
know?
And that's been a constant problem with the Cleveland Browns. You know, is that
right.
they've had a lot of coaching turnover, and so there's no continuity. And even like in San Francisco, with Alex Smith, you know, for 4 of his 5 years, he was new coordinators, new coaches every year, and he never developed into anything until he had 2 straight years with Jim Harbaugh.
Right.
Now he has a coach that believes in him in Kansas City with Andy Reid. You know, coaching continuity, I mean, that can just do a lot for a team.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
You feel like a failure over and over again. If you're a player on a team, right, that, okay, let's say you've been with the Raiders or whoever for 6 years, or the Browns, whatever, and you've seen 3 or 4 different coaches in your 6 years there, how do you not feel like a total failure? Like, these guys can't – the team, like, the people who run the team, like, they're just like, no, this guy can't work with these guys. Let's try somebody else to work with these guys. And you just the whole problem with constant coaching turnover, I mean, you just have to be able to identify
when the
coach is the problem.
Right. Well, you're not – that's the thing, is that when you're not getting rid of coaches when they're playing well.
No,
even
generally
even
not.
If they aren't –
unless you're Marty Schottenheimer.
Even if they aren't a good coach, which
unless
I think
you're Marty
that's,
Schottenheimer.
Yeah, well – even if you're not a good coach, which I'd say that's pretty tough to say that's the case, that you're a bad coach that's on a winning team. But
yeah, that'd be weird.
When the team's not doing well, it's like you said, it's tough to say, is it the coach? And a lot of times it is, for sure. A lot of times you move on after 2 years and that's good for your team because it was probably a bad hire in the first place. But and really, you can't really know unless you're in the organization.
But when coaches keep inheriting the mistakes of previous coaches, and then they're asked to do something with it, and then they can't because whatever was there beforehand, you know, wasn't theirs, they can't fix it because the salary cap and the draft pick situation in Oakland, it's unworkable.
Absolutely. I'm just saying that as an outsider, you know, we're just looking in on the situation, and we're you know, postulating here.
Sure.
And we're basically saying that he took an unwinnable situation and didn't do anything with it. And is that because of the situation or is that because of him? And that's really tough to say. And that's what I said, you know, at the end of the day, it's up to Reggie McKenzie. And he's got to know, you know, he's got to know if this guy is the right guy. And if he doesn't know how to know, then he's not the right guy.
And he's not the right guy. Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, we've got Jason Garrett. You know, honestly, I think if they win this week and go into the playoffs, I don't think his job is safe. I think the writing is on the wall for him. That's what I'm saying. Exactly. It seems cruel to keep him in this crappy situation with Jerry Jones for one more year. It seems like worse punishment than being fired. Just leave. Be an offensive coordinator somewhere. Just go. Go to college. I don't care. You don't need to be in Dallas anymore. But the longer he stays in Dallas, the worse his future job prospects look at this point.
I think that Garrett is in the same boat as Schwartz in that more than anything, it's just...
It's run its course.
The teams are just to the point where they really just can't do it anymore. It's just, it doesn't make sense to keep going down this road.
Yeah.
The only one I think we haven't discussed, I'd say, is probably the hardest to figure, in my mind at least, along the same lines as Schiano because of... I'm not really sure how everybody feels about him there, but for different reasons, is Leslie Frazier.
Yeah, I think Leslie Frazier might be on his way out.
I think a lot of people are saying that, but
I like him.
There's one big factor that I think will weigh in on the decision, and will have an effect on the decision, and it's the fact that they're shutting down the Metrodome on Sunday.
Yeah.
And they're going to be playing in TCF, the Gopher Stadium, for the next 2 years.
Yes.
So they're in this. They have this interim stadium situation going on. If it was 1 year,
you're talking about some coaching intangibles.
I know. I know. This is completely intangible related, but I think that it actually has a big factor on this because if you're talking about just 1 year where you're out in another stadium and then you'll have your new stadium and everything's cool, I think that's a great time to bring on a new coach. You make the move, you give the guy, he's got a year to, like, get his system into place, and there's a big explanation for things. Well, they're not even settled in their new stadium yet. You know what I mean? The fact that if you think they're going to make a move on Leslie Frazier and bring in a new guy with 2 years of being in this temporary situation, you know, it feels like he's going to already have his window of having to get everything together in a temporary situation.
Yeah.
Before moving into the new stadium.
So it's going to have that interim coach feel while you're in the interim stadium,
right? You're
potentially
in this interim team feel. You know what I mean? For 2 years. And then they're going to move into the new stadium with a guy that, are the fans going to be really feeling too good about him if they haven't played too well? And it's hard to say how much of that's related to the stadium, but it's also not the ideal situation for a coach to walk into, you know?
Right.
And potentially, Leslie Frazier gets a chance to stay on because the timing isn't quite right for them to bring somebody new in because of this whole stadium thing.
Right, or maybe it won't be an attractive situation for coaching hires.
Maybe you won't get the best options at coach. Absolutely. It's a whole other reason to consider that. It's like, who's going to want to come here and immediately have to go coach at coach with your home field advantage being this college stadium down the street that's half the size or whatever it is, and it's going to be tough.
Yeah, but I mean, there's some things that he can be blamed for potentially. You know, that's the question, is what he's responsible for.
Certainly.
You know, in terms of Christian Ponder, the quarterback mess, injuries. Obviously, he's not. They have a few salary cap problems that definitely don't fall to the head coach.
Sure.
And
it's hard to say, like, how much he was involved in that decision to bring in Ponder, you know? And Ponder certainly hasn't
panned
out.
And then the Josh Freeman thing,
as they
you
expected.
Know?
It's
which,
hard to
who
say
knows
he had
what that
anything
was about.
To do with Josh Freeman.
Yeah.
And I still don't understand that.
No, I still don't understand
that.
They
pay him all that money and give him one game, and he didn't play well. It was 5 days after he came on the team, and we haven't seen a not hide nor hair of him since then.
Nothing. No, and he's paid more than Christian Ponder and Matt Cassel.
Yeah, he makes more than the other guys. So, I don't know. I still don't understand that. Maybe they just realize that was a bad move and he doesn't fit with the team or something like that. Or maybe he's not working hard enough to make his way to the starter position in that team or something. I still think that he's probably more physically capable than either of those guys. But, you know, it's just not, for whatever reason, we haven't seen him since 5 days after he came on the team.
Yeah.
And it seems really odd, that whole decision at this point.
Well, I think Leslie Frazier's job hinges on...
I certainly think he could go. I'm just saying that I kind of have this feeling like it's going to be tough to make that move, you know, if you run that organization.
Well, I think it's a right question now of how responsible he is for things
right
that happen.
And that's one of those things that it's tough to know unless you're inside and how responsible he is also somewhat subjective to whoever's making that opinion call.
Right. So I just want to add here before we go to the break, some breaking news. Cornerback Nnamdi Asamoah, he is announcing his retirement Friday. He's going to sign a one-day contract with the Raiders, and Nnamdi Asamoah is going to retire. Which, he does really good charity work. He has a foundation.
Yeah.
More time for him to focus on that. And
that's good then.
Yeah, he does a lot of good for his community. He did a lot of good in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of charity work out there as well. So that's good. And it's good to see he knows, because his stuff's been in decline the past couple years. He's not even that old, but he's aware. He's not the talent he once was. And the Raider, he's going to retire a Raider. So
sure
he gets everything he wants.
He really only had about a year or two out in Oakland that he was that good anyway. And
he's a two-time All-Pro.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. It was those couple years.
Not just a Pro Bowler, but All-Pro.
Right, and that's the thing, is he played great for those couple years, and he wasn't really – he was, like, burgeoning until then, and then he broke out for a couple years, and then since then he's been a big disappointment for everybody. So, if the guy kind of sees the writing on the wall, I'm really wondering how much, like, all the – health aspects of everything that has come to light in the last couple of years, and the NFL's finally admitted.
Yeah, the
to,
people aren't wanting
like
to.
That.
They don't want to push themselves as much anymore.
There's, well, I think it's more
John
that
Moffitt and.
Yeah, I more so. I think that it's causing guys to rethink their passion for the game and how long do, boy if I'm having this issue or that issue. How
and
long
I'm 26
do I really,
right now.
How long
you know?
Do I want to subject myself to this? You know, that's what I'm saying. He's 26 and he's retiring. I mean,
I don't know if he's 26. I'm using that as an example.
Okay, sorry. I thought you'd realize, or I thought you knew that for sure. But
no.
However old he is, he's still not old. You know what I mean?
No.
He's not a guy that's, you know, in his 30, he's not 37 or anything. He hasn't been in the league for a decade.
No, he's not John Kitna.
No. but that's the thing, is like, you get to that point where it's just like, boy, it's not really quite
he's
working
32.
Out. He's 32.
He's 32.
He'll
be 33 in July.
I mean, but corners, you know, a lot of corners have played well into their 30s.
It's happening in Pittsburgh as we speak.
Exactly. And so it seems like he should have some useful life left if he wanted to play. But then that's what I'm saying. I think that the decision to retire early is going to be an increasing trend we see over the next few years. And again, I think that's a lot to do with the health issues.
Yeah, weighing the long-term risks based,
I mean, everybody
compared
always
to the long-term reward that you're going to get out
right.
of it. What is the financial incentive worth it? Is whatever it is it worth it?
Sure. And it's, yeah, it's the is it worth it to subject myself to this for what?
Right.
And it's becoming an increasingly difficult answer or question to answer for a lot of players.
Absolutely. You know, when you talk about the average, you know, you look at a guy like Nnamdi Asamoah, who's 32, look at a guy like Kitna coming back in at age 41. You know, those are exceptions to the rule. I mean, the average NFL career is but three scant seasons. You know, you're talking about these guys who are forever on practice squads. You're talking about,
right.
you know, the backup O-lineman or whatever. These guys don't last very – I mean, the majority of NFL players average 3 years. I mean, and if you're only averaging 3 years, then you're not one of the highest-paid guys in the league when you come in anyway. You're
right.
not a high draft pick. So you're not making that much – I mean, you're making, for that three-year period, probably more than you would make in a three-year period if you just got your college degree and came out and got a job.
Well, yeah, I'd say definitely more.
Definitely.
But yeah.
But in the long term, it's not – that money's not going to sustain you if you're a three-year NFL guy.
You see your window closing
sure.
for being something relevant in the NFL or having any sort of long-term you know, playing situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, it's like, well, if I'm not going to, you know, contribute and be what I thought I could be, I already have some decent money. And, you know, maybe I should just – try and do something.
Use this degree or finish the degree or whatever.
In Nnamdi's case, do something positive with that. Go contribute to his charities and do more of that work. It's because, you know, again,
he's a great community builder.
Long term effects. He could end up like not being able to do that in the future. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
and he's doing more good by doing that work
exactly.
than being on the football field.
And
you know, really.
Maybe that's his point. His opinion of it too. So.
Oh, and Brandon Stokely, former Colts wide receiver. Ravens and Broncos, he announced his retirement today, 15 years as a slot receiver, which,
wow.
As Peyton Manning said, like, how do you play 15 years as a slot
yeah,
receiver?
That's tough.
I mean, he's had a lot of injuries over the years. He most recently, he decided to shut it down. He got a concussion, and he wasn't even hit in the head, and he didn't even hit his head off the turf. He was hit in the chest by a shoulder, and it caused a concussion. And so he and the Ravens decided to shut him down for the
yeah.
year after that because
yeah. well.
That's ominous. When you're not even – when there's nothing hitting your head and you have a concussion, that is a sign to shut it down. But, yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, in contrast to these guys with three-year careers – Jesus, a slot receiver for 15 years, taking those hits over the middle. That's wild to me.
Again, it's another thing where, you know.
No, he decided there's no, he's got, he won't risk it anymore.
Right.
What's
that's
the point?
Thing.
15
what's,
years.
Why is this worth
he's
the risk
He's got Super Bowl
anymore?
Rings. He's got, you know, he's
exactly.
got.
Exactly. He's done everything he needs
yeah,
to.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the biggest news and the biggest developments right now in the NFL. We're going to take a quick break, and then it's time for Week 17 Minute Picks.
Yeah, don't go anywhere.
This will be our last minute picks of the year. Next week it's the playoffs. We can spend more than a minute on our picks, so you know, keep that in mind.
Maybe we'll do 5
Degenerate.
Minute picks.
5 minute picks. All right, we'll be back in just a moment here at the
yes.
F-Ball NFL podcast.
One of these days that it won't be long. You look for me, but baby, I'll be gone. This is all I gotta say to your woman.
And we're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and it's time for our final minute picks of the season, Week 17. Just a quick reminder, I believe I'm, what, 154 and 85 on the year with my picks, so I'm feeling pretty good. I lead Bleacher Report experts in all the picks. So
you believe you're that, or you're looking at what your record is?
I'm pretty sure that's what my record was. I'm pretty sure I have it memorized after looking at it. It's a point of personal pride for me. So let's start it off here on Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Carolina Panthers at Atlanta Falcons. You know, the Panthers have been a really great team this year. I think that Ron Rivera does have has an argument for Coach of the Year. I'm still going Andy Reid, but there's an argument there. Offense and defense, things have been going so well for Carolina. The same can't be said for the Atlanta Falcons. I think the Panthers, you know, the Panthers, they could really improve their playoff seeding this week with a little bit of help. They're going to win, and we're gonna see Cam
this
in January.
This is in Atlanta?
This is in Atlanta.
Yeah.
I'm not too worried about that.
What's the situation in the NFC South real quick? I mean, do the Saints, they don't have it locked, right? I mean, it's still going to come down to whether or not these teams both win. Or if they both win, I think the Saints maybe still have it.
Carolina has clinched a playoff spot. They will clinch the division if they can pull out this win this week. They are 11-4, and you've got New Orleans on the outside looking in. They are at the sixth seed at 10-5.
So the Panthers basically
will lock up the division.
They win the division if they win Sunday.
Yes,
I like them to win this game.
All right, up next we've got the Baltimore Ravens at the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals wrapped up the AFC North last week. They won against Minnesota, did so convincingly, and Baltimore lost and convincingly. The Cincinnati Bengals have not fallen at home this year. That's major because they're right now the 3 seed in the AFC, which means they're going to host a playoff game. That's great news for them. They haven't won a playoff game since 1990. I'm going with the Bengals here. Joe Flacco is still kind of hobbled with that knee. Cincinnati, again, one of the most complete teams in the league. I'm not worried here. Bengals.
Yeah, no, I you know, the same thing I said last week. I think that this is a good situation for them to have 2 home games to finish the season. They've obviously played great at home all year. They have plenty to play for here because they're basically playing for a bye, right?
Yeah, they could be the second seed if New England loses, as long as they win.
And yeah, I think that's plenty for them to play for. It's a divisional rival. They're trying to keep them out of the playoffs, and there's definitely enough for them to play for in this game. I like the Bengals here.
Houston Texans at the Tennessee Titans. Houston's just trying to get out of this year alive. They've got 2 wins right now. You know, last year, it's just shocking to me. It's amazing. Matt Schaub was a Pro Bowl quarterback last year. Tennessee's going to win this game. I think Houston just wants to – they want to get to this coaching search. They want to just get this year over with. Just forget it. Move on. So I'm going to go with the Titans, especially since they're at home.
Actually, the Titans were one that we missed as far as our coaching hot seats. I think that...
Oh, yes. Munchak is definitely on the hot seat.
Yeah.
But...
That's certainly, you know, something to be factored in here, but I think this is... It's at Tennessee, right? I
mean, correct.
So it's basically 2 bad situations.
Far worse than the other.
One being the Texans... Which is probably far worse than the other. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think this is probably a situation the Titans win. Of course, the Titans certainly have lost a couple games I didn't expect them to this year. But
yeah, I mean they're not beating the world at 6-9 right now either. But
I'll still take them to win this game though.
Next up, we have New York Jets at Miami Dolphins. This has serious playoff implications. Obviously, if Miami wins, they're in. You know, Miami's been kind of a confounding team this year, however, so I wouldn't even say just because they're at home that they have this on lockdown. I mean, Ryan Tannehill has a bum knee right now, and he was limping around practice, so he got a big hit last week. He was in and out of that game last week, too, against Buffalo and their league-leading sacking defense. So, you know, that's something to consider, but I think with Miami, I mean, they have the easiest path into the playoffs here. The Jets don't really have a lot going for them on offense, so I do like Miami.
Yeah, this is one of them situations that Miami should win. They have way more to play for. You know, the Jets have had lots of struggles this year. Rex is basically out the door. But
he believes he's out the door.
But it, that's, you know, he got them motivated by that last week and telling them that, you know, hey, you know, that we're, I'm basically gone, but let's see what we can do about winning these last two games. And potentially they could pull an upset here. But I think that you kind of have to go with the Dolphins.
Jacksonville Jaguars at the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts are the dedicated fourth seed in the AFC. They wrapped up the division weeks ago. You know, I don't foresee them, however, like resting their starters or anything here. I think that they still want to have a better record. I'm going to go with the Colts. It's pretty self-explanatory. I mean, Jacksonville on the road. I mean, the Jacksonville's played a little bit better than I think we all expected this year, and I think they could have had more wins than they did, but I'm going to go with the Colts. I mean, this is a playoff team. They need to.
Yeah, I think it's not just not just necessarily for a better record to finish the season or anything like that. I think that they want to make sure that they're hitting the playoffs
with a win.
You know, well, it's more like, you know, with the team firing on all cylinders and or at least
as best
playing,
best as
playing
they
as
can.
Best they can. You know, I don't think they have too many injury situations which are going to be resolved by giving a week off to somebody or something like that. They want to hit the ground running in the playoffs. I think that they got enough to play for in that game.
Detroit Lions at Minnesota Vikings might be the last time we see
AKA the hot seat bowl.
Jim Schwartz and or Leslie Frazier coaching a team this year. You know, I don't know why, but I like Detroit. I think that they're going to finally kind of realize what's on the line here, realize, you know, what they kind of blew this season, the opportunities that they blew, and at least, you know, just close the season off with a win. I like the Lions here for emotional and psychological reasons only.
I reluctantly picked the Lions last week, knowing that, you know, they similar things, you know, they had seen a lot of chances go by. They weren't mathematically eliminated yet. They didn't have much the same chance they did weeks prior, you know, to that game as far as making the playoffs. But there was still plenty to play for, and they still found a way to do their Lions thing. And I don't know. I just I don't see this happening for the Lions. They're kind of a mess right now, and mentally, and I think that's gonna carry over.
Washington at the New York Giants. Both these teams, I think, have been surprisingly underperforming this year. You know, I think, you know, obviously, you know, New York's offensive line is kind of a sieve, but Washington's defense is practically non-existent at times. I like the Giants to just get this win and then, you know, move on, try to get healthier in the offseason, figure out what they need to do defensively to get back to where they used to be. With their ability to kind of create some pressure and wreak some havoc, so I'm going to go with the Giants.
I think I picked Washington at home last week to beat the Cowboys, and that didn't happen. I expected them to have some scrap in that game, and they did. They played tough. They played them well. That being said, they're, you know, going on the road to play the Giants, and this is a battle for pride at this point. And I think that, you know, two bad teams that, you know, or like you said, underperforming teams that, you know, I think maybe the Giants probably not quite as much underperforming, and they're at home. I'm going Giants there.
So the Pittsburgh Steelers held up the end of their bargain last week, winning in order to keep their playoff hopes alive. They close their season like they do every year. They're hosting the Cleveland Browns. You know, Cleveland, I think that they would really, I think they really want this win. They've had a lot of problems this year. You know, if they could at least get to 5 wins, they match what they did last year, which is definitely not what they set out to do, but still. But I mean, the Steelers are playing really good football, especially on offense. The last 7 games, Ben Roethlisberger's only been sacked 10 times compared to 31 times in their first 8 games. The no huddle.
What a turnaround there.
No, it's the no huddle. Yeah. He's been given more free rein to control the offense, and it's really played out, and I think that they'll be good. especially with the Browns. You know, the Browns defense, they're terrible in third down. They're terrible in the red zone. They're terrible in the fourth quarter. And all those things don't bode well for them to go into Pittsburgh and win. I'm going Steelers.
No, I've been picking Cleveland quite a bit over the last few weeks just because I feel like there's a lot there. And I feel like they're close to being
a
better
team. They need a quarterback
than they are.
And a run game.
But, yeah, even with the couple times Jason Campbell had played well this year, You know, it's certainly they're having issues, and I think that's going to continue with as well as Pittsburgh continuing to play better.
Green Bay Packers at Chicago Bears. We brought up this game earlier because, of course, it's major playoff implications. The winner
of
this
year, that's right.
This is in Chicago. Aaron Rodgers is back. Randall Cobb could be also back. Chicago has a bad defense. Green Bay has a bad defense, but not as bad as Chicago's. No, Aaron Rodgers, I don't expect him to be rusty. He has been throwing in practice for 3 weeks now. I think he's comfortable. I think he's confident. I think he's ready to go. I'm going with the Packers to win in Chicago.
Yeah, you know, I think I called it last week. I didn't realize it was here. I guess I was thinking it was up there, but now I remember that game with Cutler up there and all that. That was when Rodgers got hurt, right?
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think that gives Chicago a little bit more of a chance. I think that, you know, both these defenses are gonna lack on Sunday. Both offenses should be playing better. This, you know, on paper, it looks like a shootout, especially with Rodgers back. And I agree with you. I don't think that he's going to miss much of a beat. I'm going to continue my prediction from last week that Rodgers comes back, which that part came true already, and that they're going to make the playoffs. So, they win the NFC North Championship in Chicago.
Denver Broncos are at the Oakland Raiders, and they can't rest their starters because New England's playing at the same time, and the top seed in the AFC is still on the line. I'm going to go with Denver. I think I would go with Denver, even if they had some backups in there. Obviously, you know, Von Miller being done for the year with his ACL, you know, that's a problem, but I think it's a problem that's going to, you know, plague them a little bit more when you're talking about higher level playoff style competition. I like Denver in this game.
You said it's in Oakland, right?
It's in Oakland, and Terrell Pryor will be getting the start. They're giving Terrell Pryor another shot.
Not that I necessarily think the location of this game has much bearing. I think this is just a situation where, you know, unless Denver had everything locked up, had nothing to play for, and they were like sitting everybody, then, you know, maybe that's one of the ones that's a little bit harder to call. But short of that, this is just too good a team that's, you know, just playing a team that just doesn't quite have it together. So, definitely Broncos on this.
Buffalo Bills at New England Patriots. We kind of got the same narrative going there as we do with Denver in Oakland, except this game is actually favoring the location of the superior team. You know, Buffalo could come in and pull off an upset. They do have the best pressure front seven in the NFL, and we all know that Tom Brady is pretty susceptible to pressure. He gets pretty flustered. You know, New England loses this game, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're the third seed potentially. You know, I'm sure they have that in mind, but I'm sure they also don't really care where their seed is as long as they get there. You know, Buffalo could present some problems here, you know, because of that reason, because of the pressure. They might shut down New England's run game. You know, it could get a little ugly for Tom Brady, but I'm still going with the Patriots. It's hard not to.
It's really hard to say that to go against the Patriots in this situation. Again, it's, like you said, it's similar in that if they had everything locked up and didn't have much to play for, it'd be one thing, but they certainly have something to play for, and they're definitely, I mean, I don't know how much better a team, because I think the Bills have some scrap to them and whatnot. They've lost
some
bad
games.
They've
got a nice D, so.
But yeah, they definitely have some things going in their favor, but Patriots, even if the Bills give them a game, Patriots still find a way to win.
Next up, Tampa Bay at New Orleans Saints. The Saints, you know, they're trying to keep a hold of the sixth playoff spot, and you've got teams like Arizona kind of breathing down right now. I like the Saints in this game. They're at home. Tampa Bay has obviously struggled this year. The Saints want to get into the playoffs. I guess there's some sort of, I didn't really see all of it, something up with Drew Brees' knees, but Sean Payton doesn't appear to be worried about it. I'm not worried about it, not with this game being in New Orleans. I am going with the Saints.
Agreed. Saints in the dome.
Yes.
I mean, they've played tough opponents and beat them in the dome this year, and you know, definitely playing. They play their best games there. They play their best football there, and they're playing, you know, what should be a winnable opponent or beatable opponent.
Yeah.
In the Buccaneers. So this is gonna be a tough one for Tampa Bay to finish their season, you know, in that situation.
In that situation,
yeah,
absolutely.
So, Saints.
Next up, we have the San Francisco 49ers at the Arizona Cardinals. You know, San Francisco is kind of locked in right now, but Arizona could. I think there's still an opportunity for them to get back in the playoffs situation. You know, 49ers had been putting things together a little bit better over the past few weeks, but seeing them, you know, struggle at home against Atlanta, you know, everything coming down to the last second, basically, you know, has me a little bit nervous. Arizona's been playing extraordinarily well on defense. Their offense is nothing to be ignored. I like them at home, and I'm going with Arizona.
Yeah,
the best team that may not make the playoffs this year.
That's very true. Arizona's playing really good football, and I agree that I expected San.
I mean, 11 wins for Arizona if they win this game. That's crazy talk.
I expected San Francisco to play a lot better last week than they did. But you know, it's tough to say what happens to make the results, you know, come out the way they do. Arizona's coming off a huge win. They beat Seattle, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Yeah, Seattle.
In Seattle. So it's tough to pick against the Cardinals. They got plenty to play for. I'm going to go with the Niners, though.
All right.
I like something about the Niners. They're a team that I don't have issues picking them on the road. I think they play well on the road sometimes, and I think this will be one of those situations.
Kansas City Chiefs at the San Diego Chargers. The Chargers may or may not still be alive in the playoff hunt at this point because the Jets, the Dolphins, the Steelers...
will all be done playing, yeah.
They'll all be done playing. Baltimore... you know, but they might not have anything to fight for here. But what I do know, and you know, I don't change picks, so I'm not going to change picks. I pick Kansas City. My Bleacher Report picks, but I don't really know why. They're going to be resting most of their starters. We're not going to be seeing Jamal Charles out there. We're probably not going to see much of Alex Smith. Dwayne Bowe's already been ruled out with a concussion. You know, there's an opening for the Chargers to get to the playoffs if they win this game. I like the Chargers, but I can't change my picks, so Kansas City.
Well, you talked me into it. You know, the Chargers, you know, they just beat Denver in Denver a couple weeks ago, and like I said, they're still playing for something. Whether or not they're actually playing for it at that time is another scenario, but I think that there's a good chance they win, especially if you're saying they're sitting guys. I'm going to go with that news and pick the Chargers.
St. Louis Rams at the Seattle Seahawks. Will Seattle let another divisional team come into their home and beat them? No. 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 Not this week. I don't even think they're going to rest, guys. I think that they're going to be ready to go. I think they're going to be ready to go. You know, because that would lead to 2 weeks off. They have the first round bye. You know, I always think that's dangerous, the 2 weeks off before your first playoff game. I'm going to go with the Seahawks. I think St. Louis is going to bring it to them a little bit. I will not say that the Rams are going to kind of roll over here, but
no, I think the Rams will fight and they'll give them a good game, and they gave them a good game in St. Louis, or at least for part of it, if I remember correctly. But I definitely would be more on the Rams in this case had the Seahawks not lost last week.
Yeah,
and especially considering, like you said, they have the first round bye locked up. They don't want to get too far removed from live football. And I think I like the Seahawks here to even though there's not really much at stake for them, there's not really much at stake for the Rams either. So Seahawks.
All right. And finally, to close out the regular season, 2013, the Philadelphia Eagles go to Dallas Cowboys. Winner takes the NFC East. You know, yeah. They keep saying day to day for Tony Romo, all this stuff. I get it. I know why, because I think part of it is hopefulness. You know, this is your playoff play in. You want your star quarterback out there. Nothing feels as good, you know, with Kyle Orton or Kitna. but I don't think that Romo's going to play, and I don't think that Dallas is going to win. I think that you put Kyle Orton in there and you try to make him catch up with the Philadelphia offense, considering how completely terrible right now Dallas's defense is playing. No Sean Lee this week either. That's all bad news. That's bad, bad, bad. It's all bad news for Dallas. Philadelphia will win the division Sunday night.
I think this is a tough one to call. I mean, it's really tough to say how, mainly because it's in Dallas.
I'm not concerned.
And you know, it's not just one guy, you know, Romo being out. The rest of the team's But yeah, like I said, Sean Lee's out.
The defense has been playing terribly.
The defense has been playing terribly all year.
The Eagles offense has been playing so well lately.
Right, the Eagles offense against that terrible defense, I think that's probably going to be a bit too much to overcome, and I'm going to go with the Eagles as well.
All right.
It's scary. I always feel like I pick too many road teams.
Well, that wraps up our minute picks for the 2013 NFL season, as well as for Week 17. Hope you enjoy our picks. We're still going to keep making them for the playoffs, but obviously there will be fewer games and more things to talk about. So things won't be a minute long.
Well, for picks, yeah. There'll be plenty to talk about, and it'll be like, who got fired?
Right. No, I'm saying fewer teams, games to
for
talk
picks,
about.
For picks, yes. Absolutely.
So again, those are our picks. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to send this on home. Thank you for listening to the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
Yeah.
Made up my mind. Break you this time. Won't be so kind. It's my turn to cry. Do what you want. I won't take the brunt. It's fading away. Can't feel you anymore. Don't care what you say, 'cause I'm gonna wait to stay. Gonna make you pay.
And we're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. And before we let you go, it's time for our customary reading from the Book of Bradshaw.
Lay it on us.
The Book of Bradshaw, of course, is It's Only a Game, which is the memoir written by Terry Bradshaw, who we all know. I remember playing against the Los Angeles Rams the last game of the season and being chased by Deacon Jones. Deacon was closer to me than my shadow. I just couldn't shake him. He chased me around the field, on the sidelines, up in the stands, out to the team bus, back to my ranch in Louisiana. I mean, that man would just not give up. Finally, he got me. The two of us were exhausted, lying there, and the strangest thing happened to me. I started laughing, and Deacon started laughing. The two of us were just lying there hysterical. It's difficult to explain why we laughed. Maybe it was the fact that two grown men had exhausted themselves playing tag on national television, or maybe it was the joy of playing the game at that level, finding a way to release itself. I don't know how the broadcasters explained it. It looked like Bradshaw pulled a muscle in his brain, but I couldn't stop laughing. Among those people who did not get the joke was Chuck Knoll. There you have it.
Yes.
This week's reading from the Book of Bradshaw. That was a nice one. That was a nice
sage
silly
wisdom.
One. Oh, yeah. So with that, that wraps up our Week 17 of the 2013 NFL season edition of the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
It wraps up the regular season.
And it wraps up the regular season. Next time you hear from us, there will be, 12 teams playing football and 20 teams just simply not.
I'm shedding a slight tear.
Oh, I'm shedding all the tears. You know I'm going to weep. I weep like a baby over NFL stuff. You have no idea. You have no idea. Like, I cried when it was, like, the last Monday night game. And I was just like, oh, Monday night. It's gone. So, that wraps it up. Of course, we'll be back next week to talk about coaches being fired and the first week of the playoffs, the wild card round, and all the other latest developments in the National Football League. As always, I am your host here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm Andrea Hankst. I'm the AFC North lead writer at Bleacher Report and a Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. You can find my work for Bleacher Report. You just go to bleacherreport.com, search my name, find all my work 6 days a week about the AFC North division. And of course, you can go to profootballfocus.com, check out my fantasy articles, and of course, our premium stats and all those wonderful things that everybody loves to rely on when explaining why TJ Ward is the fourth best safety in the NFL this year. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is at @FBall_Andrea, FBALL_Andrea. We can talk football, we can talk food, we can talk pro wrestling, and we can talk skincare if you want to go there. I got some good tips on that too. But mainly football.
And of course, I'm still Brian. I'm still the co-host of
He remains Brian.
This here podcast, and as well as the senior producer of this here podcast.
Senior producer now.
Yeah, you know, I figured
you got a promotion. You gave yourself a promotion during the holidays.
I've been doing this job for a while. I figured it was time that I gave myself a bump in title.
There you go.
Obviously, the pay has stayed the same.
Yeah.
And I can be found elsewhere besides this podcast on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening. I hope everybody has enjoyed this excellent NFL season. And
yes.
Hopefully we'll have a nice, thrilling month of playoff football heading into the Super Bowl, so that it makes it all worthwhile.
And then it'll be draft.
And then it'll be time for the combine. And then
draft season.
Well, combine, new league year and free agency, then the draft.
Drafts and free agents, all that stuff.
Players.
Off season.
Just players flying around, flying. Just players everywhere. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy the games this week, and we'll be back with you next week on the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Later.
Peace. You've been